Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's ADA and Disclosures conference call. Your host for today is Cheryl Lavallski. Ms. Lavallski, please begin.
Thank you, Stacy. I'm extremely excited to moderate and kick off our five-week teleconference series on working with MS, protecting yourself, and planning ahead. This is the brainchild of the three California chapters. And we have worked very hard at trying to address the challenges, trying to find employment in this difficult climate. And then you add the challenge of MS, and it becomes very difficult. So what we wanted to do is do our best with the resources that we have to make sure you're all armed and have the resources to be as successful as possible in your career. So my name is Cheryl Lavallski, and I'm the Manager of Government Relations and Individual Advocacy for the Southern California and Nevada Chapter. It's a very long title. And so I'd like to introduce our two speakers. But before we get to this very relevant, very important topic, I want to just hit some logistics and some housekeeping points. And first being that at the end of this call, there's going to be a survey. And it's coming from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. We, as a collaborative, would like to know if this teleconference was helpful, what could we have done differently, if it's something that you think we should do in the future. So if you wouldn't mind taking some time after this call and participating in the survey, we would so appreciate your input. I'd also, on that end, I'd also like to let you know this call might run a little long. There's a lot of great information, and for those of you who were able to access the WebEx, there is a PowerPoint that's associated with this, and Eddie and Cheryl will be going over the PowerPoint. So I hope that all of you got the information and are able to join. But if you're not, I hope that you don't feel the angst that you have to worry about it. You're always welcome to contact myself or any of the other two chapters and get the information. So lastly, what I'd like to introduce is the second baby of the California Collaborative Task Force, which is the new employment tab on our website. All three chapters will have a employment tab that has resources at the national and federal and state level where you can access either around ADA and accommodations or finding jobs or retraining. That's all on our website. So California, or the Southern California Nevada chapter, ours is up today, and Pacific South Coast is also telling me that theirs is up today. So for those who'd like to take a peek, I just wanted to say really quick, you can go to our website, which is www.nationalmssociety.org/CAL. And it's under Programs and Services, and there's an Employment tab. So I invite you all to take a peek. It's definitely a work in progress, but we're very excited about it. So without further ado, I want to kick this off and introduce Eddie, and I'll have Eddie introduce Cheryl to you. Eddie is from Central Florida, not California, but has lived in West Virginia for over 30 years and has been a JAN consultant since 1993. He has a Bachelor's of Arts degree in English from the University of South Florida in Tampa and earned his Master's degree in Behavioral Disorders from West Virginia University in Morgantown. Accommodation specialties for Eddie include upper body, lower body, and full body conditions. Examples would include finger, hand, arm, knee, shoulder, foot, feet, and legs, as well as full body conditions such as cerebral palsy, multiple sclerosis, fibromyalgia, and spinal cord injuries. He's been a member of JAN's motor team. Eddie enjoys searching for hard-to-find products as well as thinking up solutions for problematic functional job limitations. He likes to engage in problem-solving sessions with fellow consultants and with JAN callers. He's a regular contributor to JAN's e-newsletter articles. I'd like to introduce Eddie Whitten. Thank you, Eddie, for joining us.
Thank you, Cheryl. And welcome, everyone, to the Job Accommodation Network's webinar. On the job with multiple sclerosis, my name is Eddie Whitten. I'm a senior consultant. I'm being joined today in our presentation by Cheryl Grossman, who came to us about 3 years ago. Cheryl has a lot of experience working in the disability rights movement and a lot of specialties including housing, transportation, public access, assistive technology, voting, home and community-based services, and employment. Cheryl also specializes in multiple minority group issues as well as low incident conditions, and she obtained her master's degree in social work from the Washington University in St. Louis. Cheryl is also a member of our motor team. And we're also being joined today by Dr. Beth Loy, who is a principal consultant and part of our management team, but today she's consented to help us with our technical specialties. We're going to talk today about our service, Job Accommodation Network. Most people call us JAN. We're going to do a lot on disclosure. We're going to touch on the new definition of disability under the ADAAA. We're going to look at situations and solutions, which includes real-life scenarios, and we'll talk about some resources. Of course, we're also going to talk about some very specific accommodations relevant to multiple sclerosis. JAN's actually been around for a little over 25 years. We were here before the ADA was ever written. We were giving accommodation ideas before there was a federal law other than the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, which primarily applied to federal entities and federal contractors. All of our people here have a lot of experience. All of our consultants have a master's degree or more. One really interesting thing about our service is we don't charge for any service that we provide. We're a national service, and we feel like we're very easy to use. Typically, we get a lot of calls from employers, a lot of calls from individuals, and then we get calls from service providers, rehab specialists, educational professionals, doctors, and others, including family members, and sometimes coworkers call us. We have four major teams here at JAN. We have our motor team, which deals with mobility issues and a lot of upper and lower extremity limitation type problems. We also have a cognitive and neurological team. They specialize in learning disabilities, head injuries, psychiatric conditions. We also have a sensory team that primarily deals with speech disorders, hearing, and vision. And we have a special project here on self-employment, which is a program that is handled by one person here named Kim Cordingly. So it's an entrepreneurship type of program. As I said, we deal with the ADA, Rehabilitation Act, and of course we specialize in trying to identify accommodations to help people who are having difficulties performing essential functions of their job based on some medical condition. We have a lot of technical assistance documents that we share. We have information on benefit and cost research, policy development, process and guidance, and our website is loaded with these kinds of things. And, of course, we still mail things out to people who don't have access to the Internet or who want a printed copy. We do have 36,000 contacts per year, and this means telephone conversations, email conversations, chat, and occasionally we get people who fax us information, and sometimes people mail information in the form of a letter. We have over 3 million website requests per year. Cheryl's going to give us some information on disclosure, how to disclose, and why to disclose.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon, everyone. As Eddie's just introduced, we're going to talk a little bit about the why and how of disclosure, a topic that I'm sure you're all very excited to learn more about. Disclosure of a disability can be a more stressful event on somebody. And so having an environment of openness and an environment where there's support in providing a safe space for that disclosure is helpful. Since there's some variability of symptoms along with multiple sclerosis, we may need to look at accommodations that go across that line. Sometimes people prefer to disclose for disclosure's sake and just to let their employer know that they have a condition. Sometimes that will come along with an accommodation need, but it's not always the case. It's also important to realize that confidentiality should be something that's paramount between a manager, a supervisor, and the individual involved so that there is safe space that's created along with a disclosure. As we've sort of touched on already, flexibility and creativity with accommodation strategies can be helpful across that variability of symptoms, as we'll see in the next few pages. Okay, a little bit more on the why of disclosure. One reason would be to ask for job accommodations. This could include something like an ergonomic workstation or additional rest breaks, which take up a lot of the calls that we receive. Another reason could be to receive the benefits or privileges of employment, and that might entail something like parking or another benefit of being at work in that environment. A third reason might be to explain an unusual circumstance, and this could include something like a performance concern that's brought up in the environment. Okay, how to disclose? The individual should be letting the employer know that the adjustment or change at work is needed for a reason that's related to the medical condition, so that there's a connection between what the person is doing on the job and why an accommodation is needed. To request this accommodation, the individual does not need to use the phrase reasonable accommodation or mention the Americans with Disabilities Act specifically. They can use plain English to describe what they are needing related to the job. Verbally or in writing, you can let the employer know or supervisor know. Sometimes human resources is involved, or sometimes there's another person in a decision-making capacity. The information that's important is what is going on the job that is needed and who's in a decision-making capacity to help make that happen. Some more information on specifically formatting a disability accommodation request can be found in at least two publications. There is one that's put out by the Job Accommodation Network. There's a publication in the Accommodation and Compliance series, Ideas for Writing an Accommodation Request Letter. And there's also another publication put out by ODEP called the 411 on Disability Disclosure, a workbook for youth with disabilities. And although that is targeted at youth, it has a lot of very good information on how to approach an employer.
I mentioned earlier that we're going to touch on the Americans with Disabilities Act, Amendments Act. This is something that is rather new, and it has changed the ADA in a significant way, but basically about the definition of disability. It was effective as of January the 1st of 2009, and the final regulations came out May 24th and became effective May 24th of this year. Cheryl's going to get into some of the specifics of how the ADAAA has changed things and what it actually means.
Okay, so when we start out with this, it's important to realize that the definition of disability is truly the same as the old definition. And this addresses an individual who has a physical or mental impairment which substantially limits one or more major life activities, has a record of such impairment, or is regarded as having such an impairment. what does change with the ADAAA is that the terminology allows for a broadened viewpoint of disability, which means that more focus should be on the reasonable accommodation pieces of this. It's important to realize that an employer is able to choose from among various different effective accommodation options, the operative word here being effective accommodation options. An employer does not have to provide an accommodation that poses an undue hardship. And in dealing with this, if there is an undue hardship that is seen by the employer, it can be helpful to communicate this to the individual with the disability so that they understand where that's coming from. Also, an employer does not have to provide a personal use item that's needed in accomplishing a daily activity both on and off the job. An employer similarly does not have to make an accommodation for an individual who's not otherwise qualified for the position. So to be qualified for the position, the individual needs to be able to do the essential functions of that job with or without that accommodation. The essential functions of the job would not have to be removed in order to fulfill that, nor would an employer have to create a new position or lower a production standard for that job. For more information on the ADAAA, there is a place on the website where JAN's Accommodation and Compliance series, the ADA Amendments Act of 2008, can be found.
Let's look at some actual workplace accommodations. As you know, MS is going to have an effect on fine motor, gross motor, vision, fatigue, temperatures, sensitivity, and cognitive aspects. Fine motor, depending on what it is that the person is having difficulty doing, you might want to look at some ergonomic designs of products or workstations, provide an alternative computer and telephone access, which, by the way, today, if you have control of one body part, you can use a computer. If you could just move your one finger, use your feet, move your head, blink your eyes, you can use a computer. Sometimes we suggest arm supports to help someone who might be having fatigue throughout the day, having to hold their hands up. Primarily working on a product or using a computer, putting together some assembly type of product. And, of course, we talk a lot about writing and grip aids, page turners and book holders, and recording using a tape recorder or whatever for someone who has difficulty taking notes. Gross motor, a lot of that is going to come down to making the work site itself accessible, making sure that there's close, accessible parking, that the entrance is something that a person can easily get in and out of, and certainly all the common use areas that the employees are going to be using, those also have to be accessible for employees who have disabilities, like the restroom, break rooms, coffee rooms, and those kinds of areas in the workplace. A lot of times the workstation is made accessible by adjusting the height, moving some of the equipment, putting them onto things like monitor arms or some other manipulative type of products. Putting things within reach is very important. And certainly a good way to accommodate someone who works at a desk is to get a really decent chair.
Okay, some other things that may come up are changes in vision. Blurry vision, lower vision, double vision. Some of these things can be mitigated by magnifying materials with hand or stand or even optical magnifiers that can be used in various different settings. Another way to mitigate this might be to provide large print materials if there's a large amount of material in hard copy that is needed. Alternatively to that, if somebody is doing a lot of computer work, magnification software or even screen reading software where it would be read to the individual may be necessary. With a photosensitivity issue, glare could be controlled on a computer with the use of a glare guard, or alternatively, even installing different lighting. That may involve ultraviolet filtering. It may involve changing to incandescent light bulbs. It could even be taken care of by putting something over a white wall or on a white tile floor, such as a rug. Also allowing frequent rest breaks where the person can take a break from reading, whether that be on the computer or on hard copy, may be of help. Some of that might be accomplished by restructuring the individual's job so that they're doing reading during certain times of the day and allowed to do other tasks during other times. Another issue that comes up fairly frequently is fatigue. We've seen a little bit of that with vision, but it happens throughout the body. So one way to mitigate this might be to reduce or eliminate the physical exertion that's needed. That can be accomplished by duplicating office equipment or by moving the individual closer to office equipment. Scheduling periodic rest breaks may allow for the downtime needed. Allowing a flexible schedule to make up any time that's missed away from the office, or allowing telework where the person would not get fatigued from the extra commute. Providing a scooter or other mobility aid if the workspace is a very large space or the person experiences extreme fatigue. Also, as Eddie had mentioned earlier, is implementing an ergonomic workstation where somebody could have easier access to workstation tools. One example of this might be if somebody uses a wheelchair, raising the wall plugs so that they can reach that easier for even a wheelchair charger, a cell phone charger, or even a lamp. Another issue that sometimes comes up is temperature sensitivity. Reducing or even in certain circumstances, raising the temperature of the work site might be of assistance. That can be done through using a fan, an air conditioner, or a small space heater. Another way to change the temperature in the local environment is to make use of cooling clothing and, in certain circumstances, heated clothing as well. Again, allowing flexible scheduling so that extreme temperatures are not experienced in the workplace. That might mean changing a work start time or end time, and also allowing telework from home or an alternate location where temperature is easier controlled may work to mitigate this issue. Sometimes cognitive issues come up in the workplace. This might be mitigated in multiple different ways. Sometimes providing a different format for giving instructions. So if someone is used to getting instructions verbally by someone coming up to them, it might be helpful to have this written down, followed up with an email, or provided with a summary from meeting notes. It might be helpful also to have help in prioritizing job assignments. And this could be more formally done by changing a supervisory method where additional information is given by a supervisor on a more regular basis than had been prior to the request of this accommodation. This could also go along with providing more structure for the individual. Allowing flexible work hours allows for a little bit more structure and a restructuring of the job during the day. Another way to mitigate this might be by providing memory aids for the individual. this could be accomplished by electronic organizers or by minimizing distractions for the individual. Okay, I'm going to turn this back over to Eddie for some situations.
Thanks, Cheryl. Let's look at some real situations that we have encountered here at JAN. An example is a retail employee who was experiencing concentration and memory issues associated with MS, often forgot the closing and cash out procedures which resulted in some missed printouts of daily sale reports. The accommodation was that the employer created a numbered checklist that identified each step for the proper closing procedures and identified which reports to run from the cash registers. This accommodation benefited all employees. And this is something that we've seen at Jan over the years. If you accommodate one person, many times it helps everybody else, whether they have a disability or not. Another example is an employee who was experiencing cognitive issues as well as depression, was having difficulty working in a busy central banking office. He needed to manage a large staff of workers, provide customer service, and oversee the daily office management. The accommodation was that he requested and received a reassignment to a smaller and less busy branch office. The employee was able to maintain his salary and the responsibilities of his leadership role by being reassigned to a different office.
Okay, another example would be of an administrative assistant in a social service agency who has MS. Her duties include typing, word processing, filing, and answering the telephone. Her limitations include difficulties with concentration and short-term memory. Accommodation may be here that includes assistance in organizing her work, and a dual headset for her telephone allows her to listen to music when not talking on the telephone. This accommodation minimized distractions, increased concentration, and relaxed the employee. In addition, recorded meetings were held with the supervisor once a week to discuss any workplace issues that may come up.
An office manager with MS was unable to meet the crucial deadlines. He had a lot of difficulty maintaining his concentration and staying focused when trying to complete the assignments. So he went to his supervisor and discussed the performance issues. They agreed upon an accommodation that allowed him to organize his time by scheduling off periods during the week where he could work without interruption. He was also given a flexible schedule. It gave you more time for counseling and medical appointments, and the supervisor also provided information about the company employee assistance program, otherwise known as EAP.
An attorney with MS was going through a period of exacerbation of her symptoms and found it difficult to complete her regular workload. So her employer transferred several of the marginal functions of her job to another employee until the symptoms remitted. This accommodation allowed the employee to use the reduced levels of energy, memory, and concentration to complete the essential functions of her job.
A daycare worker requested that she be allowed to change her hours from 7 a.m. through 3 p.m. to 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. because her cognitive problems seemed to be causing a major issue with the schedule, and she was sharper later in the morning into the afternoon. A lot of times when you first wake up, you have to kind of get it together, move around a little bit, get the blood flowing, do a few activities. So if you can show that there is a pattern of difficulty based on the actual time of day, then you can modify the schedule. Sometimes people like to work a later schedule. Sometimes people like an earlier schedule. They feel sharper in the morning. Sometimes it's exactly the opposite. One thing that we all know is MS does not affect everyone exactly the same way. Because the daycare center is open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., they would still have adequate staffing at the start of the morning, so the employer was able to provide the accommodation of the modified schedule.
Okay, one of the things that was found with the Job Accommodation Network research indicates that 76% of accommodations are either very effective or extremely effective. And if individuals want additional information on this, they can find it on the website. On this website, you'll also find over 200 different publications, along with this website that we feel is pretty comprehensive. There are several ways to access the website, including SOAR, which is our accessibility resources piece, where you can search alphabetically by accommodation that's needed. You can also find on the website our ADA library, which gives a lot of information about the Americans with Disabilities Act and related laws. Another tab that can be accessed from our front page is the A to Z of Disabilities and Accommodations, which is an alphabetized listing of both the disability type as well as you can search out also by topic. There also is a tool from the front page called the JAN On Demand, which provides some basic questions that when thorough information is given, we can send send information back that might help in a specific situation. We also have the ability to interact via an interactive chat as well as in various social networks.
I'd like to go over just for a moment kind of a list of across-the-board accommodations regardless of disability or what the person's actual job is. We talked about changing the environment to make it accessible, entrances, parking, restrooms, break areas, those kinds of things. So those are going to be architectural barriers. Also, another accommodation is modified scheduling. We've shown some examples of that. Sometimes people need to either reduce their hours per day or maybe the number of days per week that they have to work. Some people are only able to work part-time. So some kind of creative way to modify the schedule would be to do one of these aspects. And what we've seen mostly with folks that have MS is that it's quite difficult to put in a long day. And it just makes sense that if you work a shorter day, let's say a 5-hour day as opposed to an 8-hour day, you're probably going to be more productive in that short day than you will be in a longer day. And because you're leaving work earlier, you're going to be able to rest up and recuperate a little bit and be fresher for the next day. Sometimes when you have fatigue issues and you've had a couple of really hard, long days, you might tend to miss some work. And you want to try to avoid absentee issues if you can. Job restructuring is something that we talk about a lot. That is when the employee says, I can do most of the job, but there's a couple of things I have trouble doing. Either don't make me do that, or maybe have someone else do it when that activity needs to be performed. Let's say lifting something heavy. And the catch is an employer only has to consider removing a job function or having someone else perform it if that job function is marginal, not essential. You are expected to try to accommodate the essential functions of the job, but not by removing them or having someone else do it. Another accommodation is, and this is the one that's last usually when an employer is looking at accommodation possibilities, you're supposed to try to accommodate the current job. But if it turns out that that can't be done for whatever reason, then you should look at a reassignment to another position, something that would not require the person to do whatever it is that they're not able to do. There's three things to keep in mind when you're considering reassignment as an accommodation. First, the employer only has to consider another job if they have one that's open or soon to be open. This means they're not required to create a position or to bump somebody out and give the employee that position. Second, the employer only has to consider positions that the person's already qualified to perform. For example, if the employer did have an open position, and let's say it was a bookkeeper position, and the employee had no skills or training in bookkeeping, the employer would not have to consider that job because they're not qualified, and they would not be required to train them to make them eligible for that position. The third aspect of reassignment says that the employer should try to provide a job that's equivalent in duty and salary to what the person's already doing, but if the only thing they have is something different and it pays less and that's all they've got, they could offer that lower paid position. it would be up to the employee as to whether they wanted to accept it or not. But we often caution employees with disabilities not to turn down an accommodation that's going to be effective. And also, we get a lot of calls these days about service animals. A service animal can be an accommodation as well. The employer doesn't have to provide the animal, but they have to allow it as an accommodation, unless they can come up with an effective alternative. And the people I've talked to who have MS and need service animals at work, it's usually involving a mobility issue, or maybe they have a kind of a large dog that they can hold on to and provide some support when they're walking down the hall. Sometimes the animals are used to carry things. They have these little like saddlebags that you can put over the animal, can carry things around for the person who might have trouble doing that. A real typical use of service animals is to pick up something that someone's dropped on the floor if they're unable to lean over and pick it up, or maybe they're using a wheelchair. So a service animal is becoming more and more of an accommodation, and it is a little controversial because a lot of people have claimed all kinds of animals as service animals, but the latest guidance that we have from the Department of Justice is that it's going to be dogs, and in some very rare cases, it might be a miniature pony. We have noticed over the years that some of our callers have mentioned things that we weren't aware of in the past. The one that I keep hearing is that there's someone else in the family who also has MS. And although it's not considered to be a hereditary type disease, there may be some kind of genetic predisposition for that. Also, I think it might have to do with where you live, the contaminants in the air and the water and the ground, those kinds of things. But this is something that we have seen that has changed. Another thing is, we're getting a lot more calls regarding multiple sclerosis. I don't know if that's because it's being diagnosed more often because some of the testing procedures have improved over the years, but we are seeing a rise in calls involving MS. You know, you can call us by phone, 800-526-7234. You can use our website, which is www. I almost said that wrong. You just type in askjan.org, askjan.org. And if you go to our website, there is a section there that highlights our phone number. There's also something that says email. If you click on email, we have a form that we actually use. It's called Jan on Demand. And this allows you to identify crucial information that we need, like what is the person's job, what is their disability, what are they specifically having trouble doing on the job, what accommodations have been considered or been tried out. And then we have a place for people to actually pose their accommodation question or ADA issue. And, of course, we answer questions about the Americans with Disabilities Act. Sometimes we touch on other federal laws like the Rehabilitation Act, Pregnancy Discrimination, Fair Housing Act, Family Medical Leave Act, but our specialty is ADA and trying to identify accommodations. So if you don't have the inclination or the time to give us a call, of course, using the Internet and using an email, our email form on Jan on Demand, you can send that inquiry anytime you want to, whether we're here or not. The next day, we respond to these emails, and as was pointed out earlier by Cheryl, we also have some social networking options as well. We are funded by the U.S. Department of Labor. They have a special division called ODEP, Office of Disability Employment Policy, and they are our funding source. We would like to open up the mic now for people that might have some questions for us, and we'll do what we can to answer those questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Sarah. Sarah, please ask your question.
I'm just wondering if I can print out the PowerPoint presentation.
You wanted to know what, Sarah?
I would like to print out the PowerPoint presentation because some of those things were kind of quickly addressed, and I'd like to read it.
Right. We understand that, and certainly that is available. We do read it for several reasons. We want to focus on the key points. We also know that there's going to be people in the audience who might have some vision difficulties and may not be able to read it, or some learning disability. So all of our webcasts are available in print. That's
okay,
not a problem
and then,
at all.
Can I keep asking questions?
Sure, go ahead.
I was wondering, it was about disclosure.
Okay.
This topic also. And, you know, I just disclosed immediately that I had it, but I'm just wondering if there's any consequences to that. As far as, you know, at the time I didn't have any problems, but as I have problems, and now, like, as people learn what disability is, they may think, you know, that I have more challenges than I actually have.
That's a good point, because many people aren't aware of multiple sclerosis type symptoms, and they don't understand the nature of the condition. Cheryl, would you give us some insight on this?
Sure. Disclosure is at the discretion of the individual. Sometimes it has to do a lot with the environment, the work environment that you're in, what your relationships look like with your employer, with your coworkers, and also what you might need at the time. Like I mentioned earlier in the slides, it is okay to mention it when an accommodation is not necessary. The consequences seem to be more on the end of if you're needing something that might impact your performance, your conduct, or your attendance at work, you're probably wanting to make sure that an employer is aware that you're having difficulty meeting those things so it could be more formally addressed, and that you can have an easier time meeting the expectations that the employer might be holding for you.
My short answer is always the same. You disclose when you realize that you need an accommodation. That might not be until you've actually started the job. You might realize it when you're in an interview and you're being told what the essential functions are. An employee with a disability who is applying for a job is under no obligation to disclose their condition. Employers are prevented from asking certain questions that we consider to be illegal questions. They can't say something like, have you filed a worker comp claim? Have you been hospitalized recently? Do you have a disability? So I say disclose when you know you need the accommodation. And many times, if you go in and announce it before you actually need an accommodation, it can muddy the water a little bit. What we already talked about and Sarah mentioned is that sometimes people jump to conclusions. They don't have a keen idea about what MS is all about, and they might either underplay it or overplay it. So as Cheryl said, it is an individual choice. My thought would be, why bring it up unless you need to? And if you know that you're having a performance problem that you've identified yourself, or someone's called you in and said, hey, here's a problem, what's this all about? That's an excellent time to disclose, because an employer is under no obligation to accommodate what they're not aware of. And some people have been fired from their jobs, and it turns out they never told the employer that they had a medical condition or a disability. They never asked for an accommodation. So if you're having a performance problem, either through yourself identifying it or a supervisor, that's when you ask for accommodation. And if you don't know what to ask for, and sometimes people don't, give us a call.
Our next question comes from Mary Jackson. Ms. Jackson, please go ahead.
Yes, I disclosed to my employer that I have MS, and because I had lots of absences and many hospitalizations. So once they found out, right now I'm on medical leave. I was in the hospital again, and I'm supposed to go back on August 1st, if I can, I don't know. but the thing is, when I called my boss to fax the note to them, I was going to ask the doctor to reduce my hours, but the supervisor demanded a progress report that shows how my MS has progressed. She wants to know. And she's, like, really rude and very rude and like, well, when are you going to come back? And I want a progress report from your doctor, and I don't even know what that is. She wants some detailed thing, and I don't know. It doesn't seem like they're going to accommodate me, because when I asked them before to reduce my hours, they said, you can't reduce your hours because your position requires 40 hours a week. But other people in the same position that I have that don't have MS work half-time. So I don't know what I'm going to need to do to get an accommodation.
Well, you know, doctors aren't always able to predict how your condition's progressing or when you're going to be able to return. You may not have a clear idea of that either. We understand the need for employers to know if you're going to come back, when you're going to come back. You know, we talk about ballpark type figures rather than a specific date because, as I've already said, doctors can't predict it. The person can't always predict it either. Also, employers are limited in what kind of medical information that they can request from you. So, you know, basically, the employee with a disability only has to provide medical information that is relevant to their current need for accommodation and their current disability. Some people have more than one disability. If you have MS and you also have, let's say, a sleep disorder or carpal tunnel syndrome, if you don't need accommodations for the sleep disorder or the carpal tunnel, you don't need to tell them about that. You don't need to provide any medical information. An employer is not entitled to your entire medical history, and employers often want that. They don't get it. They are only entitled to information that's going to confirm your current need for accommodation, and that's what you want your doctor to talk about. The doctor is supposed to identify your condition, address your limitations, restrictions, or difficulties, and confirm your need for an accommodation. And the more specific, the better. So basically, the doctor's information is kind of keeping you honest that you do have a condition, helps identify your limitations so that you and the employer can help focus on what needs to be accommodated. So again, it's very limited in what they can ask for. It really has to be specific to what you're asking for. If you need a schedule change, you want your doctor to say that and to explain why you need it in terms that the average person can understand.
Let me also add to that. The other piece that I heard in this question had to do with reduced hours and a response by the employer that it's required full time. Again, something that we mentioned earlier, it will be important to distinguish what is an essential function of a job and what is a marginal function of a job. And the information about why it's required to be full-time might be important to getting either this accommodation or some other accommodation that might be as effective. And that's part of the key here. The more information we have about the why and the how, from both the employee standpoint as well as from the employer's standpoint, will help in getting an effective accommodation for both parties.
Next question comes from Lisa. Lisa, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to get that link once more regarding crafting a disclosure letter, and do you recommend having the letter either before, during, after, or in lieu of a face-to-face meeting?
When you go to our webpage, which is, again, don't type www, just type askjan.org, askjan.org. When you find our main page, you look over on the right-hand side, down kind of low, and in large red print, and the reason I'm giving you this area rather than the link is this is a shortcut to the information that we have on our website. Our website is actually enormous.
Yes.
If you go over to the one that says for individuals, and it's in large red print, and it's on the right-hand side of our page,
yep.
For those of you who aren't able to see the screen, you click on the word employees, and you're going to see 8 articles that have been set aside especially for employees. It's kind of a shortcut to all the other information that we have on our webpage. There's something on there that says by disability A through Z. If you click on that, you're going to see an alphabetized list of medical conditions. Go down to the letter M, you'll see MS. We also have one under the letter C, cognitive impairments. So when you pull out of that, you look at the remaining 7 articles, and one of them says reasonable accommodation request letter. You click on that, and it gives you information about what goes in the letter. In short, for people who don't have access to the Internet when I'm talking to them on the phone, I simply say, be sure that you mention the law, your condition, and precisely what you want as a reasonable accommodation. So those are the 3 main things you want to get across in your letter, that you're exercising your rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act, that you have multiple sclerosis, and you want to identify the accommodation. And you don't say, I want a reasonable accommodation. You say, I want a reasonable accommodation, and then you tell what it is. You need to give the employer an idea about what you want. And as I said earlier, if you don't have a clear idea, give us a call.
Next question comes from Kaylin. Kaylin, please go ahead.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, but there's a little quivering in your voice, but go ahead.
Okay. I think you answered my question, but I'm 24. I'm starting my career after college, and I had a problem with a previous job where they were discriminatory about, you know, my disability after they found out I had low vision. And I was just wondering, after they found out, they were just like, oh, well, it's a temporary position, and we're going to let you go. And, of course, what else was I supposed to think that it was, you know, about my disability? So that job is water under the bridge now. But I'm just looking for other job opportunities now. And I think you kind of answered my question when it came to disclose when you're most comfortable.
And also I say disclose when you know that you're really going to need an accommodation. If you have an idea that there's something about the job that's going to be problematic for you, then go ahead and disclose and ask for the accommodation. And by the way, once you ask for an accommodation, even if the employer is unable to provide it, they still have to take you seriously. They still have to look at it. We refer to it as making a good faith effort, which means that you have to, the employer has to use some kind of method or process of actually looking at what you're asking for, and they're really expected to give it to you unless it's going to cause an undue hardship to them to provide the accommodation that you've requested.
Okay, yeah, I just needed this call to have a little more confidence to tell them, you know, that I need the accommodation for them not to be discriminatory about that.
Okay. But
Stacey, I think we'll take one more question. But before we take another question, I just wanted to remind everybody that we have all of Jan's information on our new website. The 3 chapters do. So if you didn't get the link for Jan, which I thank you, Eddie and Cheryl, both for repeating it and the phone number, it'll be on our website, or I'll give my contact information after the question and answers are finished.
Our last question comes from Matt. Matt, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was working for an employer where I had a couple of doctor visits, and I was the only one running the store at certain times. So I made my supervisor aware of my situation, told him that they thought it might be multiple sclerosis, and I also asked him if I could use a cane. Immediately thereafter, I was basically terminated. So I'm in a situation with that. Now I'm working for an employer, though, that I'm out on medical leave, and not the employer, but the short-term disability company that my employer requires me to get my disability verified through, continually ask me for access to my medical records and things like that. And I'm just kind of wondering, is that legal since it's not the employer that's asking for it, or is that some sort of violation?
Well, they're going to need a certain amount of information to find out if you qualify for the short-term or the long-term program, because it's a plan that's provided by insurance providers. But, again, the medical information has to be limited, very limited. These entities and employers are not supposed to, you know, delve in too deeply. They don't need to look at everything. And a lot of this is going to depend on the states. There are different regulations state by state. Many times we refer people to their state insurance department, but because actually we don't answer questions specific to insurance other than something general like employees with disabilities are entitled to the same benefits and privileges as all the other employees, and that includes insurance coverage and that kind of thing. But we don't really answer questions about short-term, long-term disability per se, other insurance issues. But your State Department of Insurance is aware of all the policies that are sold in your state, and they should be able to address this. And you can find that information by looking in the blue government pages of your phone book under state agencies, and it would probably say something like Department of Insurance.
And at the chapter level, we also do have resources of attorneys that can help you with those kind of private disability questions. So I'm looking at the clock, and according to my clock, it is nearly 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So I wanted to, again, thank Eddie and Cheryl and Beth for your wonderful expertise around this very relevant, very, very important topic for people living with MS. Again, they're from the Job Accommodation Network, commonly referred to as Jan, and they're definitely a friend to the society and a great source of information. I thank all of you for your wonderful time. I wanted to let everybody know that this along with the other 4 teleconferences are going to be recorded, and they are going to be housed on each one of our websites, Northern California, Southern California, and Nevada, and the Pacific South Coast chapter, and they will live there as long as they need to, in order to address this. It was wonderful. I learned a lot from you all, and I appreciate that. I just wanted to a couple of reminders. Our next teleconference on Secrets to a Successful Career Change about re-careering and retraining will be on July 20th, next Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I invite you all, if you haven't already signed up, to go ahead and call in and sign up. I also would like to remind you that there will be a short survey after this teleconference, and we really would appreciate your honest and helpful feedback. And if you didn't get the PowerPoint or couldn't get the phone number for Jan or the website or our website, the National MS Society's website or the employment information, I offer myself as a resource for any of the chapters, any of the 3 chapters. And my name is Cheryl Lovosky. Lovosky, and I'm at the Southern California and Nevada chapter. My phone number is 310-479-4456, extension 109, or if you're more comfortable with email, my email is my name, Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L dot L, V as in Victor, O, V as in Victor, S, K, Y, at N as in Nancy, M as in Mary, S as in Sam, .org. So thank you all once again. I encourage those of you who may have been in the queue to ask questions, to please do call Jan. They're an excellent resource, and there's no reason that you shouldn't, if your question wasn't answered, that you shouldn't be able to reach out. Their phone number, for those of you who aren't on PowerPoint, their phone number is 800-526-7234, and that's the voice phone number, or The TTY phone number is 877-781-9403. Thank you all so much for joining us. Thanks again to our speakers, Eddie, Cheryl, and for our technical support, Beth. I appreciate all of you. And I hope all of you decide to join us on July 20th for Secrets to a Successful Career Change. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our polling session. For our first question, press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Did the speaker seem to be knowledgeable about the topic? Again, that's 1 for yes or 2 for no. Polling is now closed for this question. Again, for our next question, press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Did the speaker make the information clear and understandable? Again, 1 for yes or 2 for no. Did the speaker make the information clear and understandable? Polling is closed for this question. For our next question, again, it's 1 for yes or 2 for no. Did the program description accurately reflect the program content? 1 for yes or 2 for no. Did the program description accurately reflect the program content? Polling is now closed for this question. Again, ladies and gentlemen, it's 1 for yes or 2 for no. Are you interested in participating in more teleconferences on working with MS? 1 for yes or 2 for no. Are you interested in participating in more teleconferences on working with MS? Okay, this concludes our polling session. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. You may all disconnect.